Kia ora, hello comrades. This is the final of a series of talks we're hosting drawn from the annual conference of Fight Back Australasia. We're broadcasting this one on the second anniversary of the far-right terrorist attack that targeted Muslims in Christchurch, Aotearoa, New Zealand on March 15th. We remember the dead and fight for the living. So this talk is an update on the state of the far right in Aotearoa. There's a slideshow which accompanies this talk. You can find that at our blog, jetpack.zoob.net. Our speaker, Byron Clark, has been following the New Zealand far right for the past few years, and since the Christchurch shooting, has been making content for YouTube, looking at who the local far right are and what they believe. He has also coordinated the recent issue of Fight Back magazine on this topic, which you can find at fightback.org.nz/subscribe, or for free, the articles will be going up online over the next few weeks.
Starting with how we would define the far right, and I've put in that slideshow there a sort of a flow chart from the Royal Commission report into the Christchurch shooting, which defines it as people who believe people in the state are one and foreigners threaten the community. And then they divide that into the radical right, who believe we should maintain democracy, but we need to replace liberal elites, and the extreme right, who want to replace democracy and believe that violence against enemies of the people is legitimate. So under radical right, they have cultural nationalism, people believing that Muslim culture is backward and repressed, and Western culture must be against immigration and Islamization, and that Muslims must assimilate to Western culture or return to their homelands. So since this is from the Royal Commission report into the shooting, it focuses a lot on Muslims, but often with the far right, of course, that's true for other ethnic groups that are non-white, or other religious groups that are non-Christian. And they put under extreme right, they put radical nationalism, the belief that the white race is superior, racial mixing threatens its survival, and the belief that some sort of revolutionary change is needed to overthrow Jewish dominance, and the belief that there are inferior races and racial enemies need to be subjugated, deported, or exterminated. I would say most of the far right in New Zealand fits more into that cultural nationalism category, at least in the way they present themselves publicly. No doubt there are many that in private maybe hold some of those racial nationalism type beliefs. I also think the boundary between cultural nationalism and racial nationalism can get quite blurred. The belief that the white race is superior is something that we think of often as just an extreme fringe having that belief. But as Erin mentioned in her talk just before, the doctrine of discovery was the idea that European Christians are superior to other nations. Aotearoa, well, New Zealand, more than Aotearoa, is a settler colony, and it was founded on the idea that Europeans were superior to the indigenous people here. And for much of the 20th century, maintained a white New Zealand policy that restricted immigration, particularly of the Chinese. So I think it's important to recognize that history, and that a kind of white superiority isn't really just this fringe thing, but is actually something that's very embedded in the history of this country. So moving on to the next slide I've got there, just a brief run through of the international context of the last few years. I've got a graphic in there which is from the BBC in 2019, showing the representation far right parties have got in European parliaments at that time, which ranges from sort of between in some countries like 3 or 4% up to 10, 20% in some countries, and then in Hungary actually being the government. So we've seen this rise of nationalist parties in Europe. In North America, of course, we've seen Donald Trump and everything that's come along with that. In the USA, hate crimes are at a record high. That may be because they haven't been recorded for that long. Quite likely they would have been higher in various times in the 20th century. But since recording started in the 2000s, hate crime has been increasing over the last few years. There's also been across not just North America, but the Western world, essentially North America, Europe, Australasia, a 250% increase in far-right terror attacks between 2015 and 2020. One of those, of course, being the one that happened in my hometown in 2019. And that's in the context as well of terrorist attacks overall decreasing. So things like Islamic terrorism, which is still a problem and still an occurrence, that has been trending down, while far-right terrorism has been trending up. And we've also seen during this time a kind of mass radicalization, which has been happening through mainstream social media sites, as well as more fringe websites like 4chan and 8chan. There's a lot that's been written on this. I've put one link in there as an example, which looks specifically at how Facebook and YouTube radicalized the Christchurch shooter. One of the things that came out of the Royal Commission report was that while he was active on 8chan, most of his inspiration came from watching content on YouTube, and he had donated to a number of these far-right YouTubers as well, which I'll talk about a little bit more later on. Next point to make is that the far-right today is different from the old far-right, although there's a little bit of overlap there. So in the sort of 2000s, early 2010s, we had in New Zealand groups like the National Front and later right-wing resistance. They were operating more like a gang than a political movement. For a while, those groups were led by Kyle Chapman, who wanted to take it to being more mainstream, kind of based on what the British National Party was doing in the UK at the time. Lose the fascist label and be seen as a far-right but legitimate political movement. And they never really could do that because it was mostly a lot of people with swastika tattoos and that sort of thing. And these groups were dangerous. They commit assaults on international students, on Somali refugees during that time. They were people you wouldn't want to run into at a dark alley, but they weren't really a political threat because they were disliked by everyone across the political spectrum, and we're reasonably small and not growing. Whereas the far right today hasn't emerged as a continuation from that movement, but it's been something new that has emerged largely because of what's been happening online. And I've put a link in there for further reading, which is called Shaved Heads and Sonar Ads, Comparing White Supremacist Skinheads and the Alt-Right in New Zealand by Jared Gilbert and Ben Ely, who have written a more academic look at the differences between that old far-right and the new far-right. So with that in mind, I'll get to when we started to see the new alt-right emerging in New Zealand. So talk started appearing online in places like 4chan around 2016 and 2017, and then sort of made the jump from online to offline activity as well. So we had the Auckland University European Students Association, who were trying to start a essentially white students association, although calling it a European Students Association, and claiming that they were just about European history and culture and they weren't discriminatory, which was a pretty dubious claim if you looked at some of the materials they were putting out on social media and things. There was another group started around that same time called Western Guard, which put up posters around university campuses with slogans like White Lives Matter and things like that. These groups didn't seem to last very long. It seemed like a bit of an attempt to start to get organized. People had been communicating online and maybe didn't really know each other, starting to form groups and start acting. But it disappeared pretty quickly. There's a further reading link I've put in there, which is an article in the Herald by Kirsty Johnson, called How New Zealand's Growing Alt-Right Plans to Influence the Election. That was published in 2017, so it refers to that 2017 election. And at that time, the far right were in particular trying to infiltrate the youth wing of the New Zealand First Party, New Zealand First being a sort of quite culturally conservative, sort of soft nationalist party who have long fear-mongered about immigration, Asian immigration in the 90s, and then Muslim immigration in the 2000s. Later on, the far right will fall out with New Zealand First. I'll get to that in a bit. But that was where things were at in 2017. 2018 is what I really see as the growth period for the far right in New Zealand. There were a couple of significant things that year. One was the speaking to two far right YouTubers, Stefan Molyneux and Lauren Southern. So they came to New Zealand with the hope of speaking to a larger audience. Eventually, they were deplatformed. No venue would host them. But even in saying that, they obviously saw that it was worth their time to extend their Australian tour by flying over to Auckland. They were selling tickets for, I think it was about $99 a ticket. There were people willing to pay that to see these far-right YouTubers speak. If you're not familiar with these people, both of them now have been deplatformed from YouTube at far too late. But Stefan Molyneux promoted bogus sort of race science ideas, claiming that non had inherently less intelligence than white people, therefore immigration into predominantly white countries is going to be a negative for them because these non-white people supposedly will never be at the intelligence level of white people. Lauren Southern promoted the Great Replacement conspiracy theory, the idea that there's a deliberate plot to replace white people in white countries with, well, predominantly white countries with people of colour. She had a video, don't really want to use the word documentary, but she had a video up with that title on YouTube. She also had made another video called Farmlands, promoting the idea that there's an actual white genocide in terms of the killing of white people by non-whites going on in South Africa, which is not the case. There is a high murder rate in South Africa, but the murder rate for white farmers is actually lower than the general population. There's no actual deliberate genocide of white people going on there. She also had links to the European group Generation Identity and had once travelled with them on a chartered boat and attempting to stop rescue operations in the Mediterranean from rescuing people who were trying to reach Europe. So those two people had a following in New Zealand and they came here. When they were denied a venue by the Auckland Council, a group immediately formed to raise a legal challenge, including people like former National and ACT Party leader Don Brash and other sort of prominent, reasonably mainstream sort of right-wing politicians were involved in that. Probably the arguably even more significant event of 2018, though, was the campaign against the United Nations Global Compact on Safe and Regular Migration. And this was a somewhat obscure UN agreement around what were essentially the existing human rights for people who cross a border without the proper documentation, like you're only using detention as a last resort and that sort of thing. Things that were already part of international law, but just a kind of agreement that this would be enforced. It wasn't anything binding. It was something that countries could sign on to. A number of countries didn't. Countries that were violating the human rights of asylum seekers, like the United States, Israel, Australia, and you know, Viktor Orban's Hungary. This became a big cause for, just the European far right, largely propelled by groups like Generation Identity, who claimed that this UN agreement was going to bring about open borders and was going to flood Europe with people from the Global South. That campaign reached New Zealand. It was promoted by a few sort of far-right YouTubers. One of them I've got a photo of on that slideshow. That's Lee Williams. We'll get to more on in a little bit. In particular by one called Kel Sakey, who doesn't have a huge following on YouTube, but she started a petition to Parliament against the UN Migration Compact, which was then shared around the various sort of far-right Facebook pages. And in addition to social media, people who are part of this movement against the compact would call up Talkback Radio, and it reached the point where it looked like there was this groundswell of opposition to this obscure UN agreement, when really it was a small far-right group influenced by far-right groups overseas. I've got a video about that on my YouTube channel, which looks at sort of how this conspiracy theory made its way from the fringes into mainstream politics, because it got to the point that even the National Party, our mainstream sort of centre-right opposition party, was saying that if they are elected into government, they'll pull out of the compact. And they had a petition against the compact hosted on their website right up until about 30 minutes after the Christchurch shooting, when it was pulled down. The reason they did that was because the shooter had been inspired by the same conspiracy and had "Here's your migration compact" written on one of his guns. There was a minor scandal when it was revealed that the National Party had pulled that straight after, and they ended up blaming what they called initially a junior staffer, and later came out was a former press secretary who'd worked for them about 6 years. He lost his job for the party, but no leaders or politicians ended up seeing any consequences for that. Also in that photo there of Lee Williams, the man behind him is Phil Arps, who, if you're in New Zealand, you've likely heard of him. He was sharing the live stream video of the Christchurch, quickly ruled objectionable material and became illegal to share. Someone asking for a kill count to be added on the screen, make it look like a video game. So he was involved in that that campaign against the compact as well. The first far-right extremist organisation that we saw in the modern era was the Dominion Movement. They had links to a number of overseas, particularly Australian, far-right groups. They were starting to organise. They went on hiatus again immediately after the Christchurch shooting. Within an hour of that happening, they posted on social media that they were going on hiatus, said they have nothing to do with the shooter and they don't endorse it, and then they just sort of disappeared from the internet. The Royal Commission report found that the shooter didn't have any contact with far-right extremists here, so We'll never know for sure if he had contact with the Dominion Movement. What we do know is that the shooter had contact with extremist groups in Australia, like the LAD Society and the United Patriots Front, and those groups had connections with the Dominion Movement. So we don't know if the other side of that triangle connects, but obviously when the shooting happened, the Dominion Movement got spooked and decided to fold. Just a few months later, though, we saw two new groups emerge from the ashes of that group. One of them was a group called Wargus Christi, or Christi, I guess, who styled themselves as a Christian Brotherhood. They had a heavy focus on Crusader imagery and also on bodybuilding, and could go into great detail about fascist ideas of the male body and so on, but again, we won't have the time for that. That group existed largely in the Manawatū. The leader was Daniel Guy Waring, who 10 years earlier had been part of an old-school neo-Nazi group, Blood and Honour, and there's some old news articles about him vandalising a Lutheran church. At that time, he identified as an Odinist, but obviously in the meantime, he is, you know, adopted this very medieval style Christianity and was building a far-right group around that. That group, as far as I know, has now disappeared. One of their members was arrested in December 2019. That member was an active duty soldier in the New Zealand Defence Force. At the time, we didn't know what he was arrested for, well, what he was being charged with. He has been court-martialed. The court-martial has been put off because of the pandemic, so it was likely to happen sometime later this year. He does have name suppression, so the media has been quite limited in how much they can report about him. But he was involved in this group, also an active-duty soldier. We now know he's being charged with a couple of counts of espionage and a count of objectionable material. We don't know what that objectionable material is. It may be the Shooter's Manifesto, or it may be something else. When that member was arrested and that hit the media, Wargus Christie quickly folded as well. And I don't know if they're still active at all, or if they've completely disappeared. The other group is Action Zealandia, who also reemerged out of the ashes of the Dominion movement. There are a lot of members in common. They've essentially admitted, like on their podcast, that a lot of them came out of the Dominion movement. It's essentially the people who got spooked by the Christchurch shooting and thought, well, this is serious, I don't want to be in a white supremacist group anymore. Those people are gone, but the people who weren't put off by the shooting and wanted to continue being in a white supremacist group, they reformed into Action Zealandia. A member of theirs was arrested in the lead up to the first anniversary of the Christchurch shooting after a threat to the same mosque was posted in a far-right Telegram group. They also have members who have been found to be either active or former military personnel, and they have links with overseas far-right groups, including groups like the Nordic Resistance Movement, which is classified as a terrorist group in Finland and has been responsible for numerous bombings in Scandinavia. Further reading on those groups, I haven't put any specific links in there, but I would recommend looking at articles Mark Delder has written on Newsroom. He's, as far as I'm aware, the only mainstream media journalist who has a far-right beat, who actually covers the far-right regularly. There's Thomas Manchin, Florence Kerr and stuff have written a lot about the far-right as well. I've put on the slideshow the relative moderates there. They're moderate compared to Wargus Christie, Action Zealandia, but still fairly extreme. We saw, particularly last year in the lead-up to the election, the growth of the new Conservative Party. This is a rebranding of the old Conservative Party founded by Colin Craig, which was a conservative Christian party very focused on anti-abortion politics and that sort of thing. Since Craig's departure, they have moved further right and have got more into a lot of culture wars kind of stuff. Their deputy leader last year was a man named Elliot Ekele, who promotes the idea that Western culture is superior to all other cultures. And they had numerous people from the far right sort of come into the fold in 2020. One of them who I've got a photograph of in that slide is Dewey de Boer, is a Dutch immigrant to New Zealand. He founded a website called Right Minds, which is essentially a far-right blog. He told Stuff News after the shooting that his movement had overlapping goals with the Shooter's Manifesto. So he doesn't support violence, but he shares similar goals to what the Shooter did in terms of reducing Muslim immigration and that sort of thing. He'd initially dismissed the new Conservatives as being too socialist, which really says something about his own politics if the new Conservative Party was too socialist for him. But then Elliot Ekele met with him and convinced him to join the party. He stood as a candidate and remains on the board of the party as well. Further reading on that, there's an article I wrote for Fightback called How the Far Right Found a Home in the New Conservative Party. There's also a piece on News Hub by Corazon Miller looking at the far-right infiltration of the new Conservatives. I say infiltration, but it's arguably not infiltration when they've really been welcomed with open arms into the party. Wanted to mention the YouTube personalities that have emerged over the last few years that have been promoting a lot of these narratives and ideas. Dewey de Boer, who I mentioned before, has a YouTube channel for Right Minds. Doesn't have a lot of content on it, but he does a weekly Trans-Tasman segment with Tim Wilms, who's an Australian far-right activist. The others are Carol Sakey, who I mentioned, who, again, doesn't have a big following because her videos are very dull, but was very influential in the campaign against the UN Migration Compact. And there's Lee Williams, who I mentioned earlier, speaking at that rally against the UN Migration Compact in Christchurch. He was visited by police after the Christchurch shooting because he had a number of videos up promoting the same conspiracy theory that the shooter was inspired by. He made two videos, one video, I think, initially, and then a follow-up one, looking at talking about his experience with armed police coming and talking to him after the shooting. And one of those videos was shared by the American conspiracy theorist celebrity Alex Jones and got about 75,000 views. So he was able to use that to go viral and grow his audience. And he has about 14,000 subscribers now, although that said, most of his videos get between 1,000 and 2,000 views. So a lot of those subscribers aren't actually watching. But he has been quite influential on the far right in New Zealand, not just online either. He's organised rallies in Cathedral Square that were happening, that's the main square in Christchurch, that were happening every weekend in the lead up to the election last year. An old face from the far right, Kyle Chapman, was attending those. He seems to have finally found what he was looking for a decade ago, a more moderate appearing far-right movement that doesn't have the baggage of the neo-Nazi imagery and things. Other people who attended those rallies include the man who left a hate speech message written in chalk outside the Al-Noor Mosque where the shooting occurred recently. He is somebody who has been seen at these rallies and is in the videos of them. The man who held up a bus in Christchurch by refusing to wear a mask and, not so much refusing to wear a mask because the driver was happy to let him on, but he wanted to be arrested, and he was who attends these rallies as well. There's quite a bit of overlap between the far right and the sort of conspiracy theory crowd. Another one there is Terry Opines, who I haven't watched as much as his content as I have of the others, but he does have about 5,000 subscribers. Videos tend to get between 1,000 and 2,000 views. Again, someone who's quite influential. And the other one who has become a bit more well-known recently is Damien Dement, who, a bit different from the others in that he's not sort of overtly nationalistic. He's more into the QAnon conspiracy theory, the idea that there's a secret cabal of deep state people who are trying to take down Donald Trump. He, again, has about 5,000 subscribers and a reasonably substantial following. He's a dual citizen, American and New Zealand. That's another thing, actually. Of those YouTubers I've mentioned, I think, with the possible exception of Terry, they're all immigrants to New Zealand. I think this country is something of an anomaly in that the far right here is disproportionately immigrants, but almost entirely white immigrants, of course. And then the other group that you have, which is adjacent to the far right, is the conspiracy theorists like someone we saw rise to prominence last year, Billy Tikahika, who brought conspiracy theories, including a lot of the ones that originated on the far right, to a new audience, to a much more ethnically diverse audience than those others had. And those others I've mentioned often were quite they oscillated between being pro-Billy Tikahika and being anti him, but a lot of them were quite anti him because they saw him as, when he talked about sovereignty, they saw that as being about Māori sovereignty, and they claimed he was a separatist and all sorts of things like that. So there was a divide there. But the actual ideas that he was pushing, this anti-UN belief that the UN is trying to implement a one-world communist government and that sort of thing, largely originate in groups like the John Birch Society, which was an American sort of far-right group in the mid-20th century. Not far-right so much in the sense of being fascist, but far-right in being, extremely anti-communist. These were the people who thought Joseph McCarthy didn't go far enough, and they claimed that several Democratic presidents are actually communists and that sort of thing. They're also where the anti-fluoride conspiracies originated from. The general in the film Dr. Strangelove is meant to be a parody of the John Birch Society. And so Billy Tikahika was bringing a lot of this, and along with anti-1080, anti-5G, that sort of thing, and managed to build a substantial following, started a political party, got, I think, 28,000 votes. Further reading on him and his movement, The Rise of Māori MAGA by Tina Nata, published on Itangata, definitely worth a read. And also, there was an article on Stuff called A Darker Truth, The Anti-Semitism Behind Billy Tikahika's Conspiracy Theories, because, of course, a lot of these conspiracy theories, while not overtly anti-Semitic, do have their roots there. So that's a bit of an outline of who the far right are, and well, who the prominent people are, and what they've been doing over the last couple of years. Looking a little bit at the future, I think one thing I expect to see is a growth in sort of alternative media run by the far right. A lot of these people now are getting deplatformed, especially since the siege of the US Capitol on January 6th. Twitter has taken a lot of these people off the platform. Facebook as well is more frequently giving them 30-day bans and that sort of thing. YouTube has been much less active, and while they've removed a lot of QAnon content, I think part of the reason that Damien Dement's channel has grown is because he's still there and there's less QAnon content because some of the big American Q channels have been removed, but his one's still there. The others there, again, occasionally get short bans, but while they're banned, all their videos can still be watched, and then they're back a week or two later. But nonetheless, there's a lot of talk among them about starting new news websites. There are some already, like Right Minds, although it's very sparsely updated. There's one called the BFD, which was started by former writers from Whale Oil after Whale Oil went bankrupt from having to pay legal costs for all the defamation suits that were brought against them. And there's a small number of others as well, but I think we're going to see a bit of growth there while we're between elections as well, which poses a bit of a risk because while the sort of populist right was quite divided in the elections, I haven't linked it in the presentation here, but I did an article for Fight Back called The Crowded Mist on New Zealand's Populist Right. There were, in addition to the New Conservatives and Billy T. Kahika's NZ Public Party, or Advanced New Zealand, as it was in coalition, there were a number of smaller sort of conspiracy theory orientated and right-wing populist parties that contested the election. And that meant that the vote was split between them all, and that arguably could be a good thing because it prevented any of them from getting anywhere near parliament. But in the case of alt-right media, if we have, rather than just one website where they're propagating these things, if we have half a dozen of them, that's going to mean there's different sources of misinformation, and people might read the same misinformation in four or five different places and think, okay, I've looked at multiple sources, so therefore it must be true, when really it's just the same conspiracy theories worded in different ways by people who don't get along with each other but fundamentally hold the same views. 2023 election, I think, is too far out to predict what's going to happen. One of the things that happened in the aftermath of the 2020 election is the leader of the New Conservatives, Leighton Baker, resigned. Elliot Ekele had been the deputy leader, then became the leader, but was only in that position for, I think, less than a month. And I do know that his resignation was in part because he was employed by the party during election year, and he is struggling to find employment as he's someone who's quite well known for expressing, you know, quite objectionable views, particularly around transgender people, which was a big focus of the campaign of the New Conservatives. So that party currently has no leadership. And I think I'm speculating a little bit here, but I think there's a bit of a internal division between the more far right kind of wing of it and the more moderate sort of people who have been there from the Colin Craig era. So I don't know what the New Conservatives will look like in 3 years' time. Billy T. Kahika, who had formed an alliance with former National MP Jamie Lee Ross, that alliance has split, and there's a bit of bad blood there. There's some stuff around who took money and that sort of thing. But Billy's still definitely trying to keep and maintain a following. I don't know whether he'll go in the political arena again or whether he'll be happy just to have a following of his own. With him, I think more than any of the others, it seems very much to be a grift. Though I think he probably does still believe a lot of the conspiracy theories he's pushing there. The other thing just to touch on is potential terror risks. Obviously, these are impossible to predict because any groups that are planning that sort of thing would not be doing so publicly. But what I would say from sort of having followed the New Zealand far right for this past few years is that if there was another terror attack like we saw in Christchurch, probably on a smaller scale. I don't know if we'd see something that big, but I wouldn't actually be surprised, particularly as Action Zealandia has links with some of those overseas groups. And it has come out in the media from leaked Telegram chats that one of their members was wanting to start terror cells in New Zealand and was talking with like groups like Atom Waffen about doing that. So that's essentially where things are at.